From the Triangle Radio Reading Service in Raleigh, North Carolina, this is Dick Hayden, and it's time to Connect to Success. On Connect to Success, we explore various ways through which one can pursue their own success by learning from others. We do this through interviews with and reading articles about people who are visually impaired and who have achieved success in their lives. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. Connect to success. What does that mean? Connect is pretty straightforward. It is joining two or more things together. Success is broader, yet very personal. It can be as simple as completing a single task or as complex as accomplishing a multi-part, long-term goal. It's all about hope, imagination, and resilience. It's being open to what is possible. And it's personal, because it is what you decide is most important to you. Sight, vision, envision. What do they mean? Medicine tells us sight is the physical faculty by which an individual sees or conceives of something. At the same time, sight, in the form of vision, can be a perception, thing, event, or experience that appears vividly or credibly to the mind, often under the influence of the divine. For example, consider the words of the hymn Amazing Grace, written by John Newton in 1779. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound, that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now am found, was blind, but now I see. And envision as sight is picturing some future event, process, or outcome. It is the process of conceiving of something as a possibility in the future. Sight, vision, and envision are all important faculties for everyone. Vision and envision are even more important to persons who do not have the physical faculty of sight. That's because it is a key element in connecting to one's personal definition of success and then achieving it. 220 years ago, the month of July became a time of connecting success through envisioning. It was then that our nation's founders took the step that they had envisioned as the future for what they were 13 individual British colonies. It was on July 4, 1776, that the Continental Congress approved the final wording of the Declaration of Independence for the founding of the United States of America. Our founders had envisioned the future they wanted, and then they worked over a period of years to bring it into reality. In other words, they worked hard and long to connect to success as they had defined it. This is similar to what individuals who are blind and print impaired do. Whether they are unknown, somewhat known, or well known, whether they are from the distant past or present today, they envision their future and then work to connect to success as they define it for themselves. I'd like to share with you three stories about persons who have turned vision into success for themselves that can be an inspiration to everyone to do the same. First, there is a soldier who lost his eyesight in battle. It's adapted from an article titled Blind Veteran from Normal Continues to Explore by Lenore Sabata in the Bloomington Normal Star newspaper April 17, 2016. An improvised explosive device in Iraq took away Steve Baskus' eyesight in 2008, but it didn't take away his desire to explore. In the years since the blast that also injured his right hand and left arm, Baskus has scaled high peaks, kayaked through rapids, sailed on the Atlantic Ocean, and biked from the capital of Canada to the capital of the United States. "I'm always looking for something to explore," the Army veteran said. It was that desire to explore and serve that led him to enlist in the Army in 2007 in the first place. That same desire led him to form a foundation called Blind Endeavors, to partner with other organizations to provide experiences that fuel that sense of adventure and exploration and educate people about the adaptive equipment that is available to them. "I wanted to give back and help people in my situation," said Baskus, who believes that through sports, recreation, and physical fitness, you learn your mind and your body best. Baskus said he's come a long way since he was injured. "I remember laying there in bed worrying about my team in Iraq. I felt like I should be there," he said. "The next thought that raced through my mind was, what's my future?" Through talking with other veterans who were blind, Baskus learned he did have a future, and he dedicated himself to his rehabilitation so that he could pursue it. "I made a decision that I had a life to live," he said. "There's something about great adversity that leads to great accomplishment," he explained. His most recent accomplishment was sailing a two-person trimaran off the coast of Florida and camping on one of the keys. Describing what it was like to sail, Baskus said, "You feel the wind fill the sail. You feel the vibrations. It's quite an amazing feeling." His climbing experiences have led him to the top of a 20,000-foot peak in Nepal, as well as the summit of Mount Kilimanjaro, the highest peak in Africa. On a classic 350-foot rock climb near Boulder, Colorado, that's called Bastille Crack, climbers ahead and behind him gave basic directions for where to go, but he said, "You feel your way up the climb." Baskus said, "I've traveled around the world. You know, I've not seen much, but I have experienced much." This next story comes from Blind Heroes and Role Models, an article adapted from Future Reflections, the National Federation of the Blind magazine. It begins with a note to parents from the editor. If you could choose anyone in the world to be your child's special hero or role model, who would it be? Parents may not be able to make this choice for their children, but they do have some control over the kinds of people to whom their children are exposed. But active intervention by parents is usually necessary if blind children are to have the opportunity to find worthy blind heroes or role models to emulate. There are hundreds and thousands of blind people who are making significant contributions to society, each of them worthy in some way to be a hero or role model for somebody's child. The article continues by saying, here now is a review by Brian Bourreau of the autobiography of Gerata Vermage that is titled Privileged Hands. As many persons already know, blindness can be reduced to the level of a mere nuisance, and that the physical characteristic of blindness itself does not prohibit a person from living a full and productive life in society and participating on terms of equality with their sighted peers. Instead, the social limitations placed on those who happen to be blind by a sighted society often put them in a position where they limit themselves, not through physical inability to accomplish what they want, but because they come to feel, as society often does, that they can't. Gerata Vermage explains just how he broke out of the bonds of society as a blind person and into the world of ecology, malacology, and biology. He tracks his history from his days as a young blind boy growing up in post-World War II Holland through his appointment as a professor of geology at the University of California at Davis. His story serves as a guide to a younger blind person with an interest in science, and to sighted persons who want to know what blind people are capable of doing. It also serves as a reminder to everyone that blind people are just about like everybody else in society, except that they happen to be blind. As Vermaj takes readers through his childhood, he keeps us aware of his blindness by describing his surroundings in vivid detail from the perspective of a blind person. His descriptions of his days in Gouda are filled with smells, sounds, textures, and specific street addresses. Not to be found in the book are any colors, descriptions of the surrounding countryside from a sighted perspective, or descriptions of what people wore. Vermaj instead uses sounds and smells to paint landscapes rather than sight and color. This point is significant because it reminds us again that sight is not needed to enjoy the full human experience, nor is it needed to convey that experience to readers. Vermaj describes the sweet aroma of decaying leaves and the fermenting crab apples, interrupted briefly by car fumes, as he walks to elementary school. From that, one can picture the quiet country road where occasional cars pass through the autumnal atmosphere. Vermaj stresses the support he received from his family and teachers from a very young age, saying, "My family effectively broke through the information barrier by making available the full richness of the print media to me." His parents took him out into the country and exposed him to nature. His father enabled him and his older brother, Ari, to experience the full richness of their European countryside. Through long walks, bicycle rides, collecting natural objects, and a desire to have him touch everything possible, his parents were able to instill a sense of curiosity and a love of nature at the same time. Another aspect of this support was the expectation that young Vermaj would be as responsible as the other members of the family or the class for daily chores. And if he fell down and skinned his knee while performing some chore, oh well, he'd just have to be more careful next time. Vermaj summed it up with the old Dutch proverb, which says, "I cannot," said the fool, and that is why he could not. Vermaj also received excellent Braille and scholastic instruction from the Prins Alexander Stichting Boarding School in the Netherlands. This instruction, along with his love of reading and his family's willingness to Braille everything they could, meant that Vermaj was widely read for his age by the time he left boarding school and moved to the United States, where he finished growing up in New Jersey. Once Vermaj introduces us to the building blocks of his life as a blind child and the various techniques he learned in order to function, he turns to the task of showing us how he applied those techniques toward his interest in natural history as he worked his way toward college in the United States. He takes us through the process of collecting, sorting, and cataloging various collections of shells, plants, and rocks, through the days of fishing with his brother, Ari, through planting and measuring the growth of various plants and herbs, and finally, deciding on Princeton University as a place to get his foot in the door and begin his career as a malacologist. What's that? A malacologist? A malacologist is a scientist in the field of invertebrate zoology that deals with the study of mollusks, the second largest phylum of animals in terms of described species after the arthropods. Throughout this journey, Vermaj details simply and clearly the alternative techniques he used to get the job done. He describes how he learned to work with readers, develop working relationships with lab partners, and earn the trust and confidence of his various professors. What makes his journey interesting, however, is not so much how he was able to break into a new scientific field in the mid-1960s, but rather that blindness was not, and should not have been, his overriding concern. In short, we meet a man who is obsessed with science and the full life it has to offer, and who just happens to be blind. Vermaj documents how to apply that philosophy to everyday living, where to place it in the context of getting on with one's life as a successful first-class citizen. In addition, it is a fascinating view into the mind of a leading scientist in his field and gives a glimpse into the depth and richness of a discipline that involves applying highly technical and political skills in a variety of innovative ways. This book is a good recommendation to any blind person who wants to know if he or she can succeed in a competitive environment, whether it's law, science, or letters. It is also recommended to anyone sighted who doubts whether or not blind people can make it on terms of equality in a sighted world. The book goes on to cite a number of notable blind people from around the world, some living, some passed on. It's quite a list. It begins with Louis Braille, inventor of the Braille system. Francis Joseph Campbell, an anti-slavery campaigner and co-founder of the British Royal National College for the Blind. Helen Keller, deaf and blind writer, lecturer, and activist. Juan Carlos Gonzalez Livia, a lawyer and founder of the Fraternity of Independent Blind for Cuba and the Cuban Foundation of Human Rights. Next is Tofuri Kubuka, one of the first three blind people to reach the summit of Mount Kilimanjaro and the first African competitor at the Winter Paralympic Games. Eric Wendmeyer was the first blind person to reach the summit of Mount Everest. Dana Elkar is an actor who played Peter Thornton in the TV series MacGyver. He lost his vision during the course of this time, and it was then written into the character's story so that the script and the story could continue. Ed Walker, a lifelong radio host and humorist, in from Washington, D.C. In music, the Blind Boys of Alabama, a gospel group. Then there's Andrea Bocelli, an operatic singer from Italy. Rudolf Braun is a composer and organist. Ray Charles, a pianist and singer, inducted into several halls of fame. Jose Feliciano, a Grammy Award-winning singer. Diana Gertzkaya, a pop singer from the ex-Soviet country of Georgia. Ed Haley, an Appalachian old-time fiddler. Al Hibbler, a jazz pop vocalist. Blind Willie Johnson, a slide guitarist who's been termed influential and the apogee for the instrument. Then there's Francesco Landini, a 14th century Italian composer and organist. Ronnie Millsap, a country and pop singer. Joaquin Rodrigo, a Spanish composer and pianist. George Shearing, the great British jazz pianist. Tom Sullivan, American musician, author and motivational speaker. The 1982 film, If You Could See What I Hear, is based on his autobiography. Art Tatum, Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award and Downbeat Jazz Hall of Fame member. He has partial sight in one eye. Helmut Walke, a German organist who recorded the complete organ works of Bach. Doc Watson, a guitarist in several genres. Stevie Wonder, a singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Songwriters Hall of Fame inductee. John Bramblett is an American painter and writer. He lost his sight in 2001, and he paints realistically through touch techniques using intense color. Keith Salmon is an English painter and sculptor. He was blinded through diabetes retinopathy. Homer, the ancient Greek order of the epic poems, the Iliad and the Odyssey. Then there's Didymus the Blind, an ecclesiastical writer of Alexandria. Susan Cray, a German writer and theologian. Ed Lucas, a sports writer. Gary O'Donohue, a political correspondent for the BBC. John Milton, the poet, who was blind for the last 22 years of his life. Nikolai Ostrowski, a Soviet socialist realist writer. Aldous Huxley, a British philosophical writer. Chris Holmes, winner of multiple Paralympic gold medals in swimming. Cedric Jones was an American football player, blind in one eye. Zohar Sharon, a blind golfer. Henry Wanyoike, a long-distance runner with 95% vision loss. And Tricia Zorn, a swimmer who is the most successful athlete in the history of the Paralympic Games. Jacob Bulletin was the world's first totally blind physician fully licensed to practice medicine. Gustav Dalén was a Swedish inventor and Nobel Prize winner who continued to make inventions and lead his company despite being blinded in an accident. Bernard Morin, a French topologist, blind since the age of 6 due to glaucoma. Then there's Abraham Nemeth, developer of the Nemeth Braille system for blind students in science and math. Lev Pontryagin, a Soviet mathematician who went blind at 14. But he continued mathematical study with the help of his mother and made major discoveries in a number of areas of mathematics. And Nicholas Sanderson, he was an English mathematician who went blind at the age of 12 months, but he was held in very high esteem by Sir Isaac Newton, the discoverer of gravity. Klaus Wolheim, a Swiss scientist renowned for his work in the area of diabetes. Ashish Goyal was the first blind trader in finance. Abdurrahman Wahid, the former president of Indonesia. Kristen Cox, a cabinet secretary in both Utah and Maryland. Matthew A. Dunn, a member of the United States House of Representatives. Henry Fawcett, a member of Parliament and Postmaster General of the United Kingdom. Thomas Gore, U.S. Senator. Floyd Morris, President of the Senate of Jamaica. David Paterson, Governor of New York. Bob C. Riley, Acting Governor of Arkansas. And Thomas D. Shaw, a U.S. Senator from Minnesota, who had been blinded by an electrical shock. Lastly, I'd like to share with you the story of a young boy who will not be stopped by his blindness. He is quite an inspiration. He demonstrates both what a person can accomplish and how important parents and teachers are in that process. This story is adapted from an article written by Pam Kelly of the Charlotte Observer that appeared in the Raleigh News and Observer on June 18, 2016. It's titled, He's 8, Blind, and a Finalist in a National Reading Contest. Amari Leggett is headed to Los Angeles for a national contest. The Eastover Elementary School student is competing in the Braille Challenge. The rising third grader is among 10 national finalists in his age group. Amari is 8. He loves stories, listening to them, reading them. Last summer, he read for 153 hours, the most of any incoming second grader at Eastover Elementary, an accomplishment that earned him the prize of 1 hour of presiding as principal of his school. Now his reading has earned him a bigger honor, a trip to Los Angeles to compete in the annual Braille Challenge. Amari, who is blind, is one of 50 finalists out of 1,100 contestants from across the United States and Canada. He made the finals by scoring in the top 10 out of 310 students in his age group on a test measuring reading comprehension, spelling, and proofreading. The Los Angeles competition requires him to take 3 30-minute tests, all in Braille. No one, including Amari's parents, Teresa Peterson and Karim Leggett, knew he was blind when he was born. But then his newborn body temperature dropped, plunging him into a coma. Testing found the problem, an underdeveloped pituitary gland. And it revealed something else, an optic nerve only a quarter normal size. Doctors could treat pituitary deficiencies with drugs. They could do nothing for that optic nerve. He has no light perception of any form, Peterson says. Amari was nearly 3 before he talked, but when he started, it was full sentences. Peterson, a math teacher at Piedmont IB Middle School, taught him multiplication when he was 3 years old. At 5, he memorized the names of all 50 states. He also began attending Eastover Elementary, the only Charlotte Mecklenburg Elementary School that teaches Braille. Since kindergarten, Holly Jeffries has been his teacher. Amari is lucky to have a teacher trained to instruct visually impaired students, according to Sergio Oliva, the Braille Institute's National Programs Director. A teacher shortage means services vary widely by school system. We have crazy, bizarre stories where sometimes a blind kid goes months without learning any real lesson, he says. The Institute launched the Braille Challenge 16 years ago to focus on the importance of Braille. Most blind and visually impaired adults, 74% it's estimated, are unemployed. But most who are employed are proficient in Braille. It is as essential, advocates say, as print literacy is for sighted people. When Peterson suggested that Amari enter the contest, Jeffries made it happen. She's preparing him, giving him a sense of control by writing social stories, step-by-step explanations of what he'd be doing from the time he boards the plane to Los Angeles. Amari can read 150 words a minute, Jeffries says. He is a character, and I am very proud of him. Only recently, Peterson says, has her son begun to realize what it means to be blind, to understand there's a visual world he can't access. He doesn't watch television and rarely hangs out with kids his age. Maybe that's why stories and books are so real to him. It's like if he reads it, he truly believes it, Peterson says. We hope you have enjoyed today's program and found something in it that can be beneficial to you or someone you know, especially our younger listeners who are beginning or early on in their own journey to their success, and members of the military who are continuing theirs. Remember, it's never too soon or too late to connect to your success. Be sure to tune in every third Tuesday of the month at 2:30 p.m. This program is rebroadcast as noted in the TRRS program guide and is available as a podcast at our website, www.trianglereadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call TRRS at 919-832-5138. I'm Dick Hayden for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Be sure to tune in next time. We'll be right back.